This is 928 on KNAU, Arizona Public Radio. I'm Daniel Crocker. Thanks for joining us tonight. This evening, we're going to talk about wildfire. Wildfire is a fact of life in northern Arizona, but when it comes and when it threatens lives and homes, it can be a scary and a humbling experience. This evening, we'll look back at the recent wildfires that burned across northern Arizona, and we'll look ahead at efforts to restore the health of our forests to try to prevent more catastrophic wildfires like these from happening in the future. We'll also talk about the recovery that lies ahead for the thousands of acres that burned. Joining me in the studio today to talk about these issues are Ethan Amack. He's Director of Restoration Programs at Grand Canyon Trust. Wally Covington is the Executive Director of the Ecological Restoration Institute here at Northern Arizona University. And Henry Provincio is the team leader for an effort called the Four Forests Restoration Initiative at the Coconino National Forest. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
We're also going to be taking your calls throughout the hour, your comments and your questions. You can call us at 800-523-5628. You can also send us an email at knau@nau.edu, or you can join us on Facebook or Twitter. It seems that every couple of years across northern Arizona, folks are once again reminded of the power of wildfire. There's another major wildfire in the region, and it kind of focuses people's attention on these issues. So I want to start just by asking, I'll start with Ethan Amack with the Grand Canyon Trust. What lessons should the public or do you take away from this latest group of wildfires that burned in northern Arizona?
Well, I think we're learning the same lessons we've learned before, and that is that our forests are distinctly unhealthy, that we're seeing fires burning at scales and at severities that are unnatural, that those fires are endangering community welfare, people's lives in some cases, people's properties. Our forests are seeing some tremendously negative effects of these fires. And these fires are symptomatic of a broader problem we're facing across northern Arizona, which is a systemic level of degradation in our ponderosa pine forests that requires significant attention on our part to restore those forests at landscape scale. So I think we're learning that same lesson that we've learned several times in the past, and this just brings us to the present and requires that we relearn that same lesson this year.
Wally Covington, any takeaways you think the public should take away from this latest round of fires?
Well, I think most of the people that I talk with in the public get this. And the time is running out. You know, when pretty soon it's going to be hard to find a vista of the peaks that's not burned, you know, at the rate that we're going. So there is a lot of interest, I think, in moving forward. The trick, I think, as Ethan said, is to try to move forward at a pace and scale that makes sense, that's on the same pace and scale as the problem that arises. So I think that's where we are right now.
Henry Provincio, I want to take a step back real quickly, and for folks in our listening audience who might not be as familiar with some of these issues, could you describe sort of generally, you know, what the forest, the ponderosa forest in northern Arizona looks like now as compared to, say, 100 years ago, and why that has increased the fire danger like it has?
Sure. Our ponderosa pine ecosystem is really a fire-adapted ecosystem. Historically, and this is before European settlement, they saw fires on, say, a 3 to 12 year cycle. Currently, we've missed several rounds of burning throughout our forests, and some of them haven't experienced fire for as much as 100 years. As a result of that, we're seeing quadruple the number of stems that we would normally see per acre in the forest. So in a normal stand that we might see, say, 40 trees per acre, we could be seeing somewhere from 400 to even 1,000 trees per acre. So densely overstocked stands, typically smaller sized trees, much more prone to fire.
When did we realize we were in trouble? How long ago was it where we realized we really need to do something about the health of our forests if we're going to prevent these kinds of fires?
Yeah, I guess the earliest foresters recognized this, Aldo Leopold, back just after the turn of the 20th century, was pointing out that fire exclusion was leading to some problems in watershed health and in fuel accumulation. He did that working in southern Arizona and southern New Mexico. He could see the healthy ecosystems in Mexico across the border where fire was still burning, and was contrasting those to the ones north of the border. But I think in general, it was not until the 1960s or so when we started seeing crown fires, not just fires, but crown fires on the scale of thousands of acres instead of a few hundreds of acres, that people became concerned about it. And it's easy to say it's just an anomaly. You know, well, you know, that's just, we had an unusually dry year and so on. But by the 1970s, it was clear that action needed to be taken. And so I think, although we've known about it for a long time, we still are in this cycle that Ethan alluded to earlier, is that when we're paying attention, we pay attention as a public when fires are occurring, and then we get a few wet years, we get lucky, we don't get ignitions. So 2 or 3 years, then the problem goes away, and then another fire occurs, and there's a bigger sense of urgency. That's where I think this groups like the collaborative groups, the Forest Health Council, the Governor's Forest Health Council are important to try to keep their eye on the ball, keep this problem and the solutions to it being discussed, and encouraging actions on the ground.
I'd really like to add a little bit to what Wally said there. 60s, 70s, yeah, several folks were recognizing that there were issues within our forests. And from a Forest Service perspective, we knew things weren't right, and we knew we had to do something out there to help get the trajectory back on track. It was really in the mid to late 90s we really started seeing some fires that were what we're characterizing as catastrophic events. We really couldn't we couldn't fight those fires with just the normal hand tools that we would have done in the past. We were requiring bigger equipment, aircraft, a lot more aircraft, and a lot more people, and the costs really soared, especially in the early part of this century, so 2000, year 2000 and beyond. And it's really smacking us in the face, if you will, at this point with the large fires, the fires that are hitting the interface. I think the public is really demanding a call for action out there, and something at a landscape type level like we're trying to do with Four Fry.
And when you say interface, you're talking about the urban wildland interface, right?
That's right, where the communities meet the forest.
To join our conversation, call 800-523-5628. If you're in Flagstaff, it's just 523-5628. Call us with your comments or your questions. Ethan Omack, you wanted to add something.
Sure. I think one of the interesting and promising things that's changed over the last 15 years is the broader community's recognition of the scale of the challenge in front of us. In the mid-90s, there was a lot of attention focused on work in the wildland-urban interface around communities for the purpose of community protection. And we've made some significant progress in thinning forests and reducing hazardous fuels around communities and accomplishing some restoration objectives around communities. Really, as a function of the Rodeo Chetiskay fire in 2002, the broader community started to realize that fires burning at scales of hundreds of thousands of acres, and we really needed and do need landscape scale restoration at scales of hundreds of thousands of acres and beyond. So one of the things that's changed is really the community's recognition of the scale of this problem, and a recognition that we need to be planning restoration activities and community protection activities around communities, but also into the back 40 and across the entire landscapes, which we are doing now.
But the priority has been initially anyway to do restoration work around the interfaces, right, in the forest that butts up to communities like Flagstaff.
That's right, and a lot of attention has been rightly focused on doing work around communities, protecting people's homes and lives. And again, we're making good progress in those areas, and we're starting to think very ambitiously about what to do next, what to do beyond those community protection zones.
It's really a triage, if you will. We'd like to get those acres that pose the biggest threat to the communities first, and that's really what we've been focusing on over the past decade.
800-523-5628 is the phone number to call to join our conversation. Lee is on the line from Snowflake. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me on. I wanted to make a quick statement.
Sure.
Control burning for forest health is at odds for human health when it comes to respiratory and heart disease. Control burns will shorten the lives and increase health care costs for residents downwind to the control burns. That is a fact. Just visit any ER during a control burn and note the increase of respiratory and cardiac cases.
Lee, thanks for your call. I know that the Forest Service and others are aware of this issue. Wally Covington?
Yes, Lee, I think you're exactly right on point with this, and this has been known for quite a while. One of the problems that we have when the forests are as dense as they are today, we have to have burning prescriptions to prevent the fire from getting into the canopy that occur when it's very cool, when the probability of thermal inversions and the smoke staying on the ground is very high. One of the things about ecological restoration treatments, once you thin the forest out, then you can burn under conditions where there's much more wind. You can get better mixing into the upper atmosphere so the smoke's not near the ground. But there's no doubt about it, this smoke on the ground with prescribed burning is a threat to human health. The Forest Service and certainly the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality are very much aware of this.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, we are aware of the health effects of the smoke, and particularly when we're burning in the cool season, which would be the fall. Those inversions do tend to draw smoke into the lower lying areas. And with this Forest Restoration Initiative, we hope to expand the window of when we can use fire by burning in areas where we have greater dispersion of smoke. So that would be kind of our warmer seasons, typically the summers, springs, those months where we won't have that impact on the human population as much.
Henry, you mentioned the Four Forests Restoration Initiative. And before we go any further, I want you to tell our listeners what that is and why it seems that everyone is so excited about that collaboration as a way that could really move us forward with some of these issues.
The Four Forests Restoration Initiative is an ambitious effort by the Forest Service and a stakeholders group that is made up of folks from industry, environmental organizations, research, NAU here is greatly involved. The effort is to take a landscape-level approach at restoration. Currently, we're looking at 2.4 million acres that stretches basically from the south rim of the Grand Canyon, following the Mogollon Rim, all the way to the border of Arizona and New Mexico. We're trying to take a look at landscape-level restoration, not only for wildlife, but for restoration of these fire-adapted ecosystems. And we're hoping that we can attract industry to the region that will help us to restore these systems.
800-523-5628 is the phone number to call to join the conversation. We did have an anonymous person call in Henry Provincia with the Coconino National Forest. I'll ask you, they wanted to know if there's any more information on the start of the fire or if there are any more leads. Do you know anything about that?
We have received quite a few leads, actually, but we don't have any suspects or any hard suspects that we're following at this time. The cause of the fire was an abandoned campfire.
800-523-5628 is the phone number to call to join the conversation. How important, Wally Covington, is what Henry Provincia was talking about in terms of really dealing with this issue at a larger scale?
Well, it seems to us, at least the three of us and the folks in the various collaboratives that are here in the state, that operating at a scale of just 10,000 acres, 20,000 acres, there's not enough time to treat sufficient area to really change these large landscape scales. So, landscape scale fires. So, you know, they're beyond the fire behavior side of this. There's also the economy of scale that we think we can get in the NEPA process, instead of doing many NEPA in a 700,000 acres area, do one large environmental compliance project. It's also, I think, when we get to that scale, there's the opportunity to have multiple benefits. It can be economically important. You can have enough wood offered up that you could get a small wood utilization industry and greatly expand it. Also at that scale, you get to the point where you can really change watershed behavior, get our watersheds into a healthy point where water yields are up, where springs and seeps start retaining. You can also restore wildlife habitat. When you're doing just postage stamp restoration, as we sometimes call the smaller projects, it's not big enough to really have the kinds of impacts and benefits that we all want to see out of comprehensive restoration.
And to this point, it has really been, Ethan Amack, this more postage stamp scale that we've been working at, correct?
That's correct. And those postage stamp projects are, without a doubt, very important. And those postage stamp projects are large in their own right.
Five to 10,000 acres?
5 to 10,000 acres. And there's a lot of work that has gone into those and a lot of work to be done in those areas around communities. But again, when we're talking about an area that's almost 2.5 million acres in size, and we're dealing with fires that are burning at scales of hundreds of thousands of acres, those projects just aren't large enough. So we're actually taking a quantum leap forward, moving from projects that are again, 5 to 10,000, sometimes 20,000 acres in size, to projects that are approaching 750,000 acres in size, a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, just to add in, I didn't mean to be disparaging when I said postage stamp, because we've had some outstanding collaborative restoration projects in Arizona that have been leaders nationally in forest restoration. So the Greater Flagstaff Forest Partnership, although the projects themselves were on the scale of 10,000 acres, the ambition is very large. It's 180,000 acres or so around the city of Flagstaff. Over in the White Mountains, the Natural Resources Working Group has done a fantastic job about trying to get innovative restoration moving forward. I think in both of those groups, they would much rather have had much larger projects, but it's been an evolutionary process to try to ramp up, to scale up. And that's what really makes the Four Forest Restoration Initiative different, is that it's very ambitious. Many of the people, actually most of the people that participated in the Greater Flagstaff Forest Partnership, the Natural Resources Working Group over in the White Mountains, are strongly supportive of it and are participants in the Four Fry, as we call it.
We're going to take a quick break now. We do have several callers waiting. Please be patient. We'll get to callers after the break. The number again is 800-523-5628. This is 928 on KNAU, Arizona Public Radio.